Hello, and welcome to United Way Cares on KDNK, Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. My name is Tracy Gurley-Tomaszewski, and I'm the Executive Director for United Way Battlement to the Bells. United Way Battlement to the Bells' mission is to improve lives by mobilizing the caring power of communities throughout the Roaring Fork, Crystal, and Colorado River Valleys, from Battlement Mesa to Aspen, and to advance the common good for all, focusing on education, financial well-being, and health. We work to support local nonprofits through funding and now with United Way Battlement to the Bells AmeriCorps VISTA project. To learn more, please call 970-625-8189 or visit unitedwaybb.org. Today I have John Fox Rubin and Pat Morrissey here joining me to tell us more about the Landlord Tenant Recovery Fund. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah,
and
thank
who am
you.
I speaking with?
Oh, this is Pat Morrissey. I'm with the Mountain Voices Project and one of the people who's working on the Landlord Tenant Recovery Fund.
Excellent.
And I'm John Fox Rubin, also working with Mountain Voices Project on developing this fund.
Well, let's start there, Ben. Tell me more about Mountain Voices.
Mountain Voices Project is the result of 29 nonprofit organizations, religious congregations, and educational institutions coming together around the issues of social, economic, and political inequality. And Mountain Voices Project is determined to level the playing field.
Excellent. And how did you both come to be involved with Mountain Voices Project?
John?
Well, about 5 years ago, I was working at Manaus, which is a social justice nonprofit in the Roaring Fork Valley based in Carbondale. And Manaus decided to partner with an organization outside of the valley called the Industrial Areas Foundation. And we started doing research into the type of organization that Mountain Voices Project is and started investing in building one. And so it actually took about those 5 years of many meetings and a partnership with the Industrial Areas Foundation. I was involved for probably the first 2 years of that as the executive director of Manaus, and then we spun an organization out of Manaus called Valley Settlement, which works with immigrants in the Roaring Fork Valley, and I went to Valley Settlement. So after I left, there were several other folks that really took on the continued work of building relationships between these multiple nonprofits and teaching the skills of building your own broad-based community organization. So it really has been a collaborative effort that took about 5 years. And Mountain Voices Project incorporated as its own standalone 501c3 about a year and a half ago, and has one full-time paid staff, and most of the work is done by community leaders that are members of the 29 organizations that make up the membership base of Mountain Voices Project. So now I am just involved as a leader in two of the organizations that are members. One of them is called Mountain Family Health Centers. It's our federally qualified community health center from Rifle to Basalt and into Edwards. And then the other organization I'm involved in is the Aspen Jewish Congregation, which is a regional synagogue. And then I'll hand it over to Patrick and you fill in your connection to Mountain Voices.
Well, unlike John Fox Rubin, who's really one of the prime movers of Mountain Voices Project, I'm a little later to the game. So my wife, Jean Campbell, is a volunteer teacher and a board member at English in Action. She urged me to become a volunteer tutor to teach English. And through English in Action, I got involved with Mountain Voices Project, because English in Action is one of the mainstay organizations of MVP.
Very good. And so how long have you been with Mountain Voices Project, Patrick?
I went to the delegate assembly at the end in December 2019. That was really my first exposure. I was hooked. I have to say, it's kind of a slippery slope. You know, you volunteer for your first committee and all of a sudden you're involved.
I love it. I love that you guys are so involved and doing so much for our Roaring Fork Valley and the larger community. I'm wondering, can you tell me how you all came to be involved with the Landlord Tenant Recovery Fund, and tell me a little bit more about what that fund is and how it is addressing COVID-19 relief in our area?
John, why don't you go?
I'll start and you fill in if I miss anything, Patrick.
Okay.
So last spring, Tracy, the leaders at Mountain Voices Project decided to do a listening project where the pandemic was just kicking off, and we wanted to understand from people in the community what did they see were going to be problems going forward. And it didn't take long to hear that people that were going to be sequestered at home and unable to work were certainly starting to get scared about their ability to pay their bills. And so we started saying, gee, what if there isn't enough financial support for families? What bills are not going to get paid? And we studied an article called The Rent Eats First. And the title of it really explains things, that when you're renting and your income gets drastically reduced, you really have to make a lot of compromises in other areas to keep paying your rent, because clearly housing is kind of most people's first priority. So we then assembled a bunch of leaders and started interviewing anyone in the housing game. So we interviewed landlords, we interviewed tenants, and we interviewed lenders, and we were trying to understand what's the situation like. And this was right when there was quite a bit of federal activity around, you know, mortgage forbearance, but it wasn't really clear how that would work. A lot of landlords in our community are small property owners where they may just be renting out a room, or they might have a small rental unit like an ADU connected to their house. They may have a mortgage on their house, or they may be a commercial lender or a commercial landlord with a commercial type loan. So there's obviously a big variety of needs there, and ability to tell a tenant like, hey, I'm fine, you know, if you can't pay your rent, you know, I'll work with you. Some are clearly easily able to do that, and others not at all. Others have such financial constraints on their units that they aren't able to provide rent relief. So that was kind of the information we learned. We talked to some bankers. I think Patrick was in on the banker call, so maybe I'll pause there and you could talk about any insights that came out of that, Patrick.
Well, we found out that for most homeowners with mortgages, there were forbearance provisions available, and in some cases required, depending on federal regulations. So we ended up then focusing really on what's happening to tenants and landlords. And we spoke with the bankers about their relationships with landlords whose apartment buildings they had financed, and discovered a bit about forbearance going on. If a landlord had tenants who can't pay rent, the bank would be willing to forbear in most cases for 90 days or so. But actually, you know, at the time, we wouldn't have guessed that almost a year later,
we would still be fighting the pandemic. There would still be people out of work. So at the time, it felt like, well, this short-lived crisis, you know, we need some resources, some safety net benefits and some forbearance, and it won't be too long and we'll be on the back side of this, or at least that's what I thought. But here we are, you know, almost a year later.
Absolutely. I know that many people have been shocked at the duration of the pandemic. And that 90 days you mentioned of a forbearance, that's easily met in a year's time. So then what happened in these conversations?
Well, I guess the short answer is when we looked around, there wasn't sufficient rent relief money out there from various federal, state, and charitable sources. And so we decided, because this was such a pressing need, that we would launch the Landlord-Tenant Recovery Fund and see what we could do to bring money to the table to help stabilize rental situations, keep tenants in their homes, and keep landlords afloat.
Absolutely. So this compromise, this landlord-tenant fund, tell me how that works.
John?
That's a good question. The fund has evolved since its initial conception. So when we were first conceiving of it, we heard about this interesting program that the city of Aspen was doing with its commercial tenants. And basically the city of Aspen said it would cover a third of the rent if the landlords could take a rent, one-third rent reduction. And then the commercial tenants would only have to pay a third during that first initial phase of the pandemic. And we thought, wow, what a great model. Let's roll that out region-wide for people living in homes, not commercial tenants. And we started asking if people thought that was possible. We started trying to reach landlords to see if any could make concessions. And it seemed like at that time, most of the landlords that we reached out to that could help their tenants were already doing so in a variety of different ways. And so many of them kind of voiced support for this concept, but at the same time said they weren't sure they would need it. And we said, that's okay. We think we want to build this program and have it available because we have no idea how long the pandemic is going to go on. And we know if it continues too long, you know, you won't be able to keep making concessions and things like that. So we started designing it around that one-third, one-third, one-third model. And we raised money from a couple counties, a couple individual philanthropists, and a dedicated rescue fund. And once we had sort of capital raised, we were really looking for an innovative way, because Mountain Voices Project isn't a services organization, and so it doesn't have staff, and most of us are volunteering our time to try to, you know, create this program. We needed an efficient way for it to distribute funds. So we came up with a model where nonprofits in the valley could become vetting organizations, and we would have multiple organizations able to write checks, and ideally, they would be writing checks to people that they already know. So if it's, for example, I'm going to say Valley Settlement has a staff of 30 plus and works with hundreds of families year round around education. So if any of their families were struggling, we thought, gee, who better for them to reach out to than this organization they're already familiar with. And so we signed up a number of vetting agencies, and then we use one fiscal agent. So all the money we've raised goes through one central fiscal agent, and it's a dedicated foundation that's controlled by the Garfield County Housing Authority, and it's called the Uncle Bob Foundation. And ironically, the Uncle Bob Foundation has been in existence since 1995 with a mission of economic security. So it was essentially a foundation ready and willing to do this kind of work because we're really talking about financial security in the community. So that has been the fiscal agent. And then how an individual would access the fund is there's a website that we created for the fund, and all of the vetting agencies are aware of people they know that they would recommend to it and are willing to be called by people in the community that may not have an affiliation with any of those vetting organizations.
And so can you share with us what that website is?
Yes, it's got a pretty short URL. It's www.ltrfund.org. And so again, it stands for Landlord Tenant Recovery Fund, but it's just ltrfund.org.
So how long have you all had this program working in the community?
It's been up and running, what do you think, September? I mean, we were designing it most of the summer, and all of these other aid programs came out while we were starting to launch this, including there's a statewide program called the Property Owner Preservation Program, where landlords can apply on behalf of their tenants and get 100% of the rent directly from the state. That was from some of the Federal CARES Act money. There have been different counties have also done direct relief. And so we were kind of in this moving target zone, but I think we really went live around September. But I could be wrong. Patrick, do you remember
that? That sounds about right. You know, as we learn, it takes a while to put all these things together. But the objective was let's get the organizations and agencies that are really closest to the ground. Let's enlist them and create this you know, fiscal pipeline through the Garfield County Housing Authority's foundation. And frankly, it did take a little while, but yeah, September, we were up and running in September. And frankly, as John was mentioning, you know, our model didn't take off. Remember our one-third model did not take off because right at the time that we launched it, there was a lot of, seemed to be, a flood of public money that was easier to access, and it was basically 100% of rent. So,
right.
So it was, you know, I mean, landlords weren't dying to make to forgive rent if they didn't have to. You know, they wanted to keep the tenants because these are tenants who are paying rent when they're working, and there's no future in getting rid of a good tenant. But if the option was there to draw down 100% of the rent without having to engage without the nonprofit agency having to engage the landlord and engage the tenant and coming to an agreement and each contributing a third. So we got a slow start, I would say, because of that, right, John?
Absolutely. Yep.
Well, and I think it's interesting to recognize that no one had a playbook for how any of this COVID relief or COVID reaction would look. And so we were all on our heels a year ago. And to see how far you've come, it's quite an achievement. Congratulations, you guys.
Well, you know, this is my first pandemic, so thank you, Tracy.
Yeah, it would be nice if it's our last, too, right?
Absolutely. So working with Garfield County Housing Authority and Uncle Bob Foundation to get this money into the community, people need to go to www.lcrfund.org, or they can contact a local agency that they've already got a relationship with. United Way Battlement to the Bells happens to be one of the agencies that can offer this landlord-tenant funding as well. So for more information on that, you can visit unitedwaybb.org. Outside of all of this work you've been doing, before we say goodbye today, I'm just hoping maybe you guys can share your favorite story of how your work on this project has impacted the community. I'll start with you, Patrick.
Oh, you know, we were able to help a woman in Parachute, and she had two children that were sick, so she couldn't work because she had to take care of them. And then her husband lost his job, so they were behind. I mean, you know, the sky was falling on them. You know, not to mention the pandemic. And we were able to step in and help them. And you know, I mean, even being able to pay the rent, they still had
bills. Right. Yeah, rent is the foundation, though. And so offering them that security, I'm sure it meant a great deal to them. John, do you have a story you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we're really proud of is, even though the one-third, one-third, one-third model wasn't perfect, it created an opportunity for landlords and tenants to have more conversations where tenants were willing to kind of raise the white flag before things are so dire and, you know, check in with their landlord. And a good story is there were a few landlords that were very hesitant to really give a handout to their tenants because they're Western rugged individualists, which is a large part of our community, and there's a lot of pride both at the landlord at the tenant level. And in dialogue with some of these landlords, once they realized that, you know, and none of them wanted to evict people, right? They just feel like people need to be accountable and all that. But we had a landlord reach out to another landlord and offer to help that landlord fill out the property owner preservation program. Whereas early in the conversations, that other landlord was like, you know, I don't believe in government aid. I'm a libertarian. I don't want to take anyone else's money. But this landlord reached out and basically said, look, you're doing this to not only help your tenants, but to help yourself, because if you just go after your tenants that don't have any money to pay, and there's currently an eviction moratorium, you're going to spend a ton of money trying to evict these people once that moratorium is out, because they'll be in such dire straits, you know, 2 months from now, that you'll have no choice but to evict them. So you really are going to be hurting your. So we kind of came at it from a multiple angle, you know, because it is a complex issue of, you know, it's actually going to be in your self-interest to take some federal money that's being dispersed by our state, that's because of taxpayers, that we all are, that in a pandemic, you might want to reconsider your strong values, right? Like, we all have strong values. And so he spoke to him as a peer, not as a judge, not as someone, you know, trying to make him feel bad. But it was really like, this is why I decided to take that government handout, because I've never had a handout before. And so I think we've learned having conversations that are very relational is an important tool for resiliency in our community.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you both joining me today for this conversation. I look forward to seeing you both in person someday soon. And I want to remind everyone to visit www.ltrfund.org, especially if you are looking for rental assistance and you need help. You are more than welcome to reach out to United Way, Battlement to the Bells, at unitedwaybb.org as well. And I'd just like to say thank you and goodbye to both my guests, Patrick and John.
Thanks so much, Tracy.
Have a good day.
Okay, likewise.